Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Josh. Welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. Hope everyone had a good week. Today, we are going to talk with Robbie Dunn from Into the Cauldron, SB Nation's wonderful Atletico Madrid blog. We're going to talk about this weekend's fixture between Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, two teams heading in opposite directions, it would seem. We're going to talk about Antoine Griezmann and Luis Suarez, of course. Also discussing Barcelona's 3-0 defeats to Benfica midweek and Atletico's 2-1 win over Milan in the San Siro. I'm going to have some fun with the red card chicanery that happened in that match and the last second penalty. I have to say this. I don't know if I'll remember to say this to him, but like the atmosphere and the San Siro for that match was just like, it's just everything you live for in European football. Atletico Madrid visiting Milan in their first home Champions League match. And I can't remember how long. I think it had been like, 18 months or whatever. Probably longer than that, actually. And it was awesome. I don't really want to talk about anything else right now because we're going to talk about all this with Robbie and more. Everyone, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. If you're not subscribed, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, all the places you get your podcasts. And full transparency in the interview with Robbie, there were a couple moments where there were internet problems. That's what happens when you use the internet from the United States to overseas. Sometimes things get a little mixy in the internet, so you'll have to excuse a bit of lag here and there, but the interview was great, and here we go. Alrighty, everyone, welcome back to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. We're joined by our old pal Robbie. Robbie, how are we doing today?
I'm good, Josh. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we had to have you on because Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are unfortunately playing this weekend, and it's two teams heading in opposite directions, as we saw this week in the Champions League. Just first off, I'm just going to get the Barcelona stuff out of the way. Lost 3-0 to Benfica. Not all that surprising. I do want to talk about the Milan match. So you guys go into the San Siro before the match. Kind of what were your expectations? Were you happy? Like if they got away with a draw, like kind of what were you thinking based off their current form?
Well, you just said there that there are two teams going in different directions. And I don't really know if that's the case at all, because I think Atletico Madrid this season have been completely, I wouldn't say, they're going through a period of kind of transition themselves into a more attacking team, a more aggressive, progressive team. But they have been kind of, they've lacked clarity in attack, and the signings that they brought in and some of the older the players that had been there, they're still young guys like Joao Felix and that. I'm not entirely sure where they fit, and that's kind of similar to Barcelona right now. Like, you've got some really good players and that, but what's the idea? Like, what's
listen, you're being really kind. I would more so compare Atletico Madrid's problem to like PSG's problem, where they have so many good attacking players, and it really is like a, I mean, when you say you have Luis Suarez, Griezmann, and João Felix all in your attack, right? Not to mention the rest of the squad. I say opposite directions because I think Atletico Madrid's ceiling this year is, if Simeone's able to figure it out, and if anyone can do it, it's him, their ceiling is probably the highest in La Liga, if you ask me.
Yeah, like, I mean, I you might be talking about the Luis Suarez from maybe 3 or 4 years ago or before, because I just worry that he's going to fall off a cliff. And from what I've seen this season, and I watched every minute of every game, and I just wonder, like, at the end of the day, those one-touch chances, like those balls into the box where he can just hit it first time, like, he's still a killer in that sense. The problem is, Atletico are trying to be a more, like, associative, I think is the term in Spanish, like, kind of more automatisms and combinations and things like that. And I don't know where he fits into that. So I understand that, like, the talent is there and Griezmann, the names are there. I just don't know where they fit. So when you say, like, if anyone can do it, it's Simeone. Absolutely legendary Atletico Madrid coach, that's not changing. His job isn't in danger or anything like that. His status as the best coach in Atletico Madrid history isn't in danger. But, like, I spoke about this on a podcast I do with one of the guys, Jeremy, and a couple of years ago Diego Simeone said, he was asked about Atletico and how he sees them, and he sees Atletico Madrid as an aggressive, counter-attacking, physical team, and that's how he sees them. The problem now is that he has to turn into a more possession-based team, and some of those kind of characteristics that he sees, he's being forced to, and I use the word forced there because I feel like he is forced, because he because of his own success, he has made Atletico so good that they have to change how they play. And it feels like, to me, it's not organic. It's going against his nature about how he sees the game. He hates risks, hates taking risks. Has always said that he'd rather win a game 1-0 than win a game 5-4, because if he sees a scoreline of 5-4, that means there's four mistakes. And that's just, no, he doesn't want that. So the problem is, and what we see, or what we saw against Milan on Tuesday night, was an Atletico Madrid side going into the second half. Now, granted, they had a man advantage, so they were always going to play a little bit more progressively and have a bit more time and space. But they were fighting for their Champions League lives. Like, they had drawn with Porto, were on the brink of losing to AC Milan with two Liverpool games coming up, another game against AC Milan. And Joe Felix came on, and they had to take risks. There was no other option. And I worry that in games that are nil all, Atletico don't know how to show their personality and how to break down defences and how to take those risks and things like that. So, obviously, as you said, the talent is there. Where they fit and whether Simeone kind of lets their personality show is another thing. And he's going to have to change, not change his nature, but he's going to have to let these players play if they are to reach the ceiling that you spoke about earlier.
So what has changed? I guess, like, obviously Antoine Griezmann is back, but between last year's Atletico team that figured everything out and was able to sort it, I guess, why wouldn't they just be able to, I guess Barcelona asked the same question with Antoine Griezmann, why would they not just be able to figure it out again this year, but just have an extra attacking option off the bench?
Well, I still think they can win La Liga, but the goal for...
Would
for,
you say they're favorites in La Liga? Because I would. I would say they're clear favorites.
I would say they're favorites. I don't know about clear favorites, because Real Madrid have looked quite good. But if they were to get the maximum out of that team, they are clear favorites. Barcelona cannot compete with them. Real Madrid shouldn't be able to compete with them. But the problem is, so last season they won the league, and when we assume that it was some amazing, everything clicked, that wasn't the case. Barcelona should have won La Liga last year. They lost to Granada, and they let them off the hook a couple of times. The first half of the season was amazing when Simeone went to three at the back, and we saw that kind of evolution. But since then, it was kind of back to Simeone playing, not really knowing what he wanted to do. So, like, and then it's just a matter of Simeone. So, individual performances for a start. I mean, Hermoso was amazing for a long time last season, got them over the line. Savage and Felipe were quite good. Jimenez, when he came in, Trippier was really good. Carrasco was amazing. Their levels have kind of dropped this season. And secondly, Simeone knows that they bought Rodrigo de Paul, they bought Griezmann. João Felix has to do something this year. Like before, it was kind of, give him time. This is it. This is the season, or else they're going to have to move him on because it's just not going to work, I think. Suarez isn't getting any younger, and Simeone feels this is our chance. This is our chance to win back-to-back La Ligas and make a really good run at in Europe and the Champions League. And I think so the problem is he's been taking where he used to play a defensive midfielder, Gabi in the past, Thomas Partey, perfect for what he needed to do. He wanted to remove that player and play Koke there, which was an attacking midfielder slash a body there. I won't call him a defensive midfielder, but a body there to kind of, that knows a kind of like a general on the field for Simeone. But that hasn't been working. So he's had to go back to Condogbia, which takes who's been excellent, but that takes a place out of the attack for them, a player has to be dropped. And then you're left kind of fitting eight really good players into four or five spots, and all of a sudden he doesn't know what his best team is, won't give them enough time to kind of settle in. None of them have performed well enough to say, yeah, you're in the starting 11, that's it. And when you take Felix out and put Griezmann in, you have to kind of shift things. It's not like a like for like replacement. Suarez has to play or else he gets annoyed and he loses his fitness, so he has to play. So you're kind of, when he's not playing well, you're like, What do we do here? Do we panic, and like how is Suarez going to react if we drop him? So yeah, it's very muddled at the moment. Like, and as I've tried to explain there.
Yeah. So in the Milan match, at least just from my eyes, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, the Atletico attack to me looked dead until João Felix came on. Is that per usual for how things have gone this year? Because this is the first time I've actually kind of watched Atletico. Is that kind of how things have gone so far this year offensively? Like, he's kind of the main attacking force, creativity-wise?
No, not at all. And this really is the problem with João Felix. And this is one of the criticisms aimed towards him. And I think it's more of a coach's issue than with Felix himself, in that he came on against Milan and it was a win, like they had to, okay, a draw might have done them, but like they had to get a goal. They had to get a goal, and that was it. There was no, it wasn't like they were playing Celta, or they didn't play Celta Vigo, but they weren't playing Villarreal in the third week of the season where it was like, draw is fine, whatever. Like, a loss even is okay. Like, not that it's ever okay, but there was no real pressure. João Felix came on against AC Milan and was calling for every ball. He was like putting his hand up. He walked onto the field with like a swagger, like, and he did that in the Champions League maybe two or three years ago. I think it was against Leipzig. And he came on and he just was in this mood. You could see by his demeanor, this guy means business. He wanted to take players on every time he got the ball. He was turning, facing the goal and being like, let's go, I'm dribbling here. And we haven't seen that from him, and I feel like that personality, so that might liberate him once he kind of gets back to full fitness. But that's the João Felix we need to see, and that's the João Felix that could define Atletico's season, because with Suarez aging, Griezmann, as we saw at Barcelona, he's not like a C level either, but he has the potential to be that main guy, the star with which everything else revolves around. So if he plays and performs, that will facilitate Griezmann to do what he does best. And it will create chances for Suarez. It will loosen up defenses that are closing in on him. It'll free up Thomas Lemar to be his best. And, you know, I think Joao Felix hasn't done that enough for various reasons in the last 2-3 years. And if he does, Atletico can meet that, reach the ceiling, Atletico can. Now I won't say win the Champions League, but they can make a really good run at it, and then their favourites are clear favourites for La Liga.
So let's talk a little bit about, I'll say this, former Barcelona player Antoine Griezmann. The relationship between him and the Atletico Madrid fans, is that sort of a starting over, he has to win them back sort of process?
I don't know. I mean, I felt a little bit, his first game back at the Wanda after he left for Barcelona, the fans booed him and everything. And to be honest with you, I got the feeling, now maybe this isn't true for every Atletico Madrid fan or even the majority, but I got the feeling that they were booing him because he left them, rather than any kind of, like hate, like proper hate for a guy, like say the kind of hate that Atletico Madrid fans have for say someone like a Courtois or a Kun Agüero or a David De Gea, who kind of left under kind of murkier circumstances and kind of didn't maybe tell, or Atletico fans might think that they didn't tell the full truth. Courtois coming out saying Rohit Blanco everything to, and then going to Real Madrid and kind of talking up Real Madrid, whereas Griezmann, from what I've seen of him and from what we've seen of him, is he's a fairly jovial kind of a guy, maybe a little bit naive at times, but just regular guy, a completely regular guy who sometimes doesn't really maybe understand or appreciate his status, and he just doesn't get it because he's just normal. So he went to Barcelona and I think he was hurt, and I think he knew he had to kind of go somewhere to grow and to win a Champions League. I think Atletico Madrid fans too, at some level, I think they did understand that. And they understood that, like, it was time for him to move on. Now, they booed him because that's what you do. But I felt like, I never really felt like the hate was there. And now that he's back and he is very feels like, or it looks like he's quite remorseful about that, and it didn't work out for him at Barcelona and he never fit in. And I just think that the Atletico Madrid fans at this point just feel a little bit sorry for him, maybe, in that he had it all at Atletico, threw it away to move to Barcelona, wasn't ever really wanted there, and now he's back and they're kind of looking at him going, okay, just do us this solid for next 3 years and be, score some goals and be decent, and we'll all will be forgiven. That's what I feel. Now, maybe that isn't the case, but that's what I feel anyway.
Yeah, it is kind of funny you mentioned they feel a little bit bad for him, because it is kind of, it's hard to feel bad for someone in his circumstances, but if you were to feel bad for him, it's like he kind of threw it all away to go to Barcelona and just, and I've talked a lot about, Griezmann has been a staple of our podcast over here, talking about why it didn't work. And I feel the majority of that responsibility was on Barcelona's side. They got a star player who didn't ever really fit into their plans and never adjusted to make it work, and just kind of forced him into the Barcelona style, and it didn't work. That's not his style of play. So I think he could succeed and thrive back at Atletico Madrid, obviously. Let's talk about, what lessons did you learn from the Alaves loss over the weekend?
Oh, the Alaves loss. Well, to be honest with you, the podcast I do with Jeremy, I went on and just was like, this feels like Groundhog's Day, in that it kind of furthered my concerns about Luis Suarez, and it proved that Atletico kind of were running on luck for a lot of this season. It's only been a couple of months since the season started, like 7 games or whatever. But like, Atletico have been mightily lucky and I think that they were kind of scraping by, as we saw against Espanyol, and then against Espanyol, and then there was another game they came back and won. Getafe, they came back and won. It was like, oh, this is Atletico, never say die. And it was like, you shouldn't be in that situation. Alaves are pretty awful this season. Getafe, haven't won a game and have only scored two goals and conceded 11. Like, this kind of, and now I know that Atletico haven't talked about being favourites, but and you're supposed to be the favourites for La Liga. Like, it has to be better than this. So it just kind of furthered my concerns that there is no plan. AC Milan feels like it might be a turning point just as a matter of confidence and a psychological thing for Atletico. But at the same time, those worries remain, because it was only when AC Milan went down to 10 men and Atletico were fighting for their lives that they actually responded. So, yeah, my concerns about Atletico's lack of clarity remain. I didn't actually see the full Benfica game, but Barcelona are in serious, serious trouble, I think. And I mean, this could be another game at the right time for Atletico to boost them psychologically, because Barcelona have always been a team that they just struggle to kind of get results against. The fact that they didn't sack Koeman, it doesn't seem like they're going to before the game, so they don't even get the new manager vibe, bounce, whatever you want to call it. So Barcelona are in serious, serious trouble.
Yeah, listen, we'll talk about them in a second. I did just want to say, I pulled up Atletico Madrid matches. Can you tell me off the top of your head, since the start of August, how many Atletico Madrid matches have featured a red card?
A red card? For Atletico or for the other team?
Either team.
Okay. Well, Getafe, there was one, 100%. Who else was sent off? Joao Felix was sent off the other day. The AC Milan game, yes. Celta Vigo, there was a red card at the end of that. Elche, I don't think so. Villarreal, I can't remember. I would say out of, how many games have they played? Eight. I would say five.
Actually, so that's 10, including friendlies, looks like. Six. Six matches. Which is just, yeah. That's just funny. I never pull up a schedule like this and see that many red icons.
But if you actually look at Atletico's record, and this is another kind of thing that there's a little bit of this seeping into Atletico's performances and their attitude, is a lot of the yellows that they get are for complaining and fighting and arguing with the ref and kind of things like that. Like, Joao Felix was sent off for pointing to his head and saying, "Are you crazy, ref? Are you crazy?" And he got a second yellow for that. There was another red for a fight at the end of the game at one point. It's not really great. They've got a lot of yellow cards for complaining to the ref this season. I think it's 10 or 11.
I mean, like you mentioned, kind of scraping by. I hadn't looked at the goal differential stats. They've only scored 9 goals this year, which I'm telling you, you know this, which is just, I mean, that's almost, that might be near bottom half of the table for goals scored this year. That's crazy.
If you dig a little bit deeper, if you look at the amount of times they've gone behind this season,
really,
they went behind to, they lost Alaves, went behind to AC Milan, were losing to Villarreal, last second collapse from Villarreal got them a point there. Celta, I think that was, they went, it was 1-1. Espanyol, they were losing until the 198th minute or something, 94th minute. Elche, I don't think they were behind Elche, but like in most of these games, they've gone behind. They went behind, to Getafe, the worst team in the Liga, like. And yeah, I like you said, they're clear favourites. I don't know, Josh, I think you're a little bit overly optimistic on the Atletico Madrid front.
And hearing you say that they've gone behind, it does make me kind of think back to what you were talking about earlier, to where they're trying to figure out what it looks like to become a more attacking team. And I guess they're leaving themselves a little bit exposed early on.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. That's from what I've seen anyway this season, yeah.
All right, let's just do a couple of minutes on this weekend's match. So Barcelona are traveling to Atletico Madrid. This is a battle of the fourth and sixth teams in La Liga. Barcelona have a match in hand, of course. Barcelona are going to be slightly healthier this weekend. although I still, that health obviously didn't help them that much against Benfica. Is there a, and I love asking people this, especially in the last 12 months, is there a player on Barcelona that scares you at all?
Well, I wasn't sure what you wanted to talk about today, and I was just kind of thinking about what we might discuss and things, but I think this team is, it's a kind of funny, and not really funny at all, it's tragic in a way, but the if this team is built for Frankie de Jong to, and he's been excellent for the last two seasons, and I think he's going to take, and I think he's got the personality to do it, but he will be the leader of this team, I think, for the next maybe 10 years. He's just incredible. And without him, I think they become, they're not as multidimensional. They lose that kind of speed that they have of thought. They miss out on his runs and into the box. And he just does everything for them now. And he could probably do with having a more defined role and a set role and defined role. On a better team, but I think he is the key player for them this season, or on Saturday and for the rest of the season and for the rest of the decade.
Yeah, I mean, then the problem with him too is like he's so much better than what's around him right now that it's kind of glaring. He like, it almost looks like sometimes he's in spots and in different situations where he looks around him and he's just either a step or two ahead or he's thinking about something else. Yeah. And everyone else is just kind of doing something different. And yeah. That gap in talent and poise right now is just pretty glaring.
Yeah. And it's a pity we didn't get to see him at his best with Messi, because that would have really been a sight to behold. But yeah, I mean, I know it's been said and I know, but Barcelona are in serious, serious trouble. I don't know if you've read Simon Cooper's book, The Barcelona Complex, but I read it the other day, and he it's not really all massively revealing. It's some really good anecdotes, insight into what they're trying to do at La Masia and things like that. But he went on a podcast here in Ireland, The Second Captains, it's called, and they were asking him basically, how do you see Barcelona going? And I don't know if you're familiar with the Premier League, but historically, but he said he could see Barcelona going maybe somewhere between Leeds United and Man United. Leeds United were in the Championship for like 6 years, a number of years. They completely collapsed. And what we're seeing right now is like, on what we saw, like that Benfica game, and it wasn't like before in the past, regardless nearly of who was playing, you had to have a perfect game to beat Barcelona. Everything had to go your way and you had to be perfect, or else you didn't even have a chance of getting a point. This Benfica weren't even that good. Like, they weren't even like, oh my god, yeah, they had the night of their lives. They were there for the taking. And I think, as well as the salary, and I know I don't mean to depress you here, Josh, sorry, but with the salary drop, and I'm just wondering, like, what's going to happen here? And it is kind of scary, like, to think about that from as a fan of La Liga, and speaking to your fans or your listeners, who I'm sure are mostly Barcelona fans, but like, yeah, it's deeply worrying as to what the future holds for Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess the more common, just maybe who isn't a specific fan of any team in the Liga, would think that maybe teams like Atletico or Real are, you know, not dancing on Barcelona's grave, but it's bad business for everybody when Barcelona are this bad. And when you don't have the trio in La Liga all succeeding, like, it's just, it's not good for anybody, because Atletico are probably the best shot La Liga has at getting a Champions League semifinalist this year. Real Madrid, I mean, we saw this week, Real Madrid don't look up to form in Europe. Granted, that was obviously a crazy upset, and Real are probably going to get out of the group and be fine. But point notwithstanding, like, Barcelona's downward spiral and that future, the future is murky and probably more disconcerting than we would all... Because I guess it's hard to imagine a future that is more... worrisome than losing Lionel Messi, because you literally can't afford him, than, you know, spending all this money on Coutinho, Dembele, Griezmann, losing Griezmann for nothing. Dembele and Coutinho are worth nothing. And all of this bad business piling up, like you're trying to focus on the positives of Fati and Pedri, but De Jong, like you mentioned, but it's hard to when you look at the future financially, managerially, and you're just like, there's not really a positive to look forward to. So you kind of have to focus on, I just hope these young guys stay long enough for us to be successful and don't decide to leave.
And that's the other thing about, at what point do the unforeseen consequences kick in? Like, at what point do managers just stop wanting to manage Barcelona? Like what you're left with is
that point managers. Has passed. Like, that's Roberto Martinez is the guy we're looking at right now, who is basically Ronald Koeman 2.0, failed at Everton, now manages the national team, where he's been like a competent manager, but he's managing Belgium, so I don't know what people expect. And I'm just like, even if he was crazy enough to want to come to Barcelona, like, is this where we're at this point? And it's it is.
And the other name I heard mentioned was Andrea Pirlo, who got the Juventus job by a technicality almost. And what you're left with is managers, with all due respect to them, are managers just desperate to manage Barcelona. Like Quique Setién, I love Setién. I think he's great, and he's I love his style of football. But he was a manager; the players had all the power. But yeah, like it's more worrying, and it's worrying for the Liga. Yeah, but it's worrying for the traditionally big clubs. Like I'd say, because like, is it possible for a team to be run well, and to be to compete against the likes of PSG and Man City? Like, because Barcelona, the reason they've fallen into ruin is because they've been trying to keep up with these teams instead of just accepting. And now I understand that Messi complicates it because you're just trying to get the best and get the most out of him while you have him. But like, the reason they're in ruin is because they just could not accept the process of rebuilding. This rebuilding has been necessary for, not a decade, obviously, but like 5 years, this rebuilding has been, and they're kicking the can down the road, and all of a sudden, look, you're probably going to finish 10th this year and not play, like, you know, and it's like, okay, maybe we should have just rebuilt when, and did it properly instead of kicking the can down the road, trying to keep up when it was quite obvious that we need a rebuild. So I just, it's worrying from that respect. Like, is it possible to keep up with these teams, or are the new football powers here to stay, and are they just going to make football uncompetitive for everyone?
Yeah, I mean, I won't say it started with this, but it definitely kicked into overdrive is when they spent the Neymar money immediately instead of sitting on it. Like, that's when things really kicked into overdrive to lead us to where we are today. So let's get a off-the-cuff prediction from you. What's going to happen this weekend?
I don't really like making predictions, but I'm going
to
be bold.
Okay, well, then you'll have to make a prediction. I'll go ahead and do it. Atletico are going to win. There you go. There's my prediction.
I'm going to say Atletico 3-1.
There you go. All right. Hey, if we score a goal, that's better than we did this week. So.
I was thinking 3-0, and I was like, surely Barcelona will score, but I'm not crossing my fingers on that one. Yeah, I'm not holding my breath.
Based off of how Atletico have started games, maybe we can get an early goal. We can feel good for 45 minutes, and then you can bring Joao Felix on if he doesn't start, and things can go to ruin for us. So,
yeah,
Robbie,
yeah.
Thank you for joining us. What's the name of the Into the Cauldron podcast?
We're called Colchonero Chat, and we do podcasts after every game. And you can catch myself and Jeremy Barren, a friend of mine, on that pod. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Robbie. Well, thank you for joining us, and enjoy the match this weekend.
You too, Josh, if you can.